Okay, this is Earl Bell with Republic Magazine, and we have mostly in the past had our publisher, George Shepherd, to host these, but he's away out of state for a while, and so I'm filling in for him. And our special guest today is Jeffrey Grupp on alternative energy and self-sufficient living. Tomorrow, which is Wednesday, we'll have Chuck Dewey on alternative sources of energy for whole wellness. And then Thursday, we have Tim Anderberg on alternative food sources for the challenges ahead. So we really have quite a week. It's action-packed. You don't want to miss any of the guests. It's going to be a real treat. So with that, what I want to do is go ahead and introduce Jeffrey Grupp. He's the host of the Antimatter Radio Show at antimatterradio.com. And he was recently featured in the Camp FEMA documentary, which is quite a good documentary. If you haven't, you definitely need to get a hold of that. He's the author of three books, Telementation, Corporatism, The Telescreen, and he is a former lecturer at Purdue University and Indiana University. He's been a guest on radio shows such as the Alex Jones Show and the Nutra Medical Report. And Jeffrey is a fervent Second Amendment advocate and activist, and he's an amateur survivalist, as he describes it, and he's deeply involved in alternative spirituality, alternative medicine, and herbalism, and he lives in West Lafayette, Indiana, with his family. And I think with that, I can definitely tell that Jeff has a very eclectic interest and knowledge and learning. And I'm looking forward to having him share with us today a number of things that I think we're going to find very interesting. And I think maybe what we'll do is we'll just jump right into it. And I know that, Jeffrey, you have an idea of something that's coming in the future, the near and the long term. And so what does the future really look like? Are we entering a dark age?
Well, I really buy into this whole dollar collapse issue. I think that that's the central issue of our time right now. And I think we're starting to, really last Monday when that report came out from the independent newspaper, the London Independent, about the meetings of governments around the world on how to get out of the dollar. I think the story they're telling us about how it's 8 years off is not true, because we're seeing all kinds of signs that it's imminent, such as the dollar weakening so much over the last 10 years. And the dollar doesn't need to weaken a whole lot more before we get into real trouble. I mean, if it goes to, say 1.6 or 7 to the euro, let alone what it goes to other currencies, we're in big trouble. So if that happens, it would be like an atom bomb to our economy, and our way of life, we know, would go away completely in many ways, and I think that's imminent. I think before the end of the year, we're going to start really feeling. We're feeling it now, of course. It's already in motion, but I think we're really going to start feeling it, and it's going to become visible, and it's going to become the main topic on everybody's mind here before the end of the year, maybe even within the next 4 to 6 weeks. Now, I could be wrong on times, but I mean, if so, I think I'm just going to be wrong on timing. It would just take longer than that, and it would be still those same events are in motion. You can just pull up a chart on the dollar and you can see exactly what's going on. And clearly all the nations of the world are uninterested in keeping the dollar for very much longer as the reserve currency. So yeah, dark age of some sort is upon us here in America. And it's kind of ironic because if you listen to other shows that I've done, such as Dr. Deagle's show, I've talked about how I actually think there's a renaissance coming in the future. But I think that's going to be after we go through this time of really what could be called horror or hell for a while. Maybe in 10 years or so, I think that the people are going to be, after the U.S. government goes bankrupt and this whole New World Order system collapses on its face, which is exactly what I think is going to happen, I think the people are going to be set free to be what they are, which is pretty amazing. And all this technology that's been suppressed through the decades, I think is going to be at our fingertips, and we're going to create a new renaissance with all this new technology. I mean, we're led to believe that the space shuttle is, you know, high tech, this tin can that was invented in the 50s. You know, I mean, it's if people only knew all this tech, solar power and everything that's been invented out there, it would be quite a different world. So I think we're going to hit a dark age. The New World Order is going to get what they want. It's going to be mainly a dark age here in America, maybe Canada quite a bit, Europe. But it'll be short-lived, 5 to 10 years, and then we're going to come out of this like a lion. It'll be a whole new, incredible world for us. Now, that might sound pretty speculative, but if I, in past writings that I've posted on Gary Franchi's site and other places, there's reasons to hold that speculation could be what comes about.
So it sounds like there's going to be kind of a, you might say in a way, a breakdown as far as how things have been, and a kind of a dark controlled type situation. But then after that, a breakthrough, and then a whole new situation, a brighter day. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't hold the view that in the breakdown, it's going to be just that, a breakdown. I don't think that there's going to be these goon patrols all over the place rounding people up. Now, certainly some of that's going to go on because it's going on already now. I mean, we've got CPS rounding up kids. We've got people being thrown in prisons for smoking marijuana and stuff like this. So there's rounding up and concentration camp activity going on just right now, of course. And they've got all these camps built, and they're going to be used. I've held the opinion, just like I said in the Camp FEMA film, I hold the opinion that they're not going to round people up manually like they did with the Jewish and Nazi Germany and so forth. I think that what they're going to do is the system is going to totally fall on its face with the dollar collapse. And when the dollar is done, there's going to be basically a nation of homeless in many ways, what will become. And people, I think Alex Jones has talked about this, and then he's talked about how the FEMA camps will be advertised as a place to go for safety. And the reason I hold that there won't be roundups is just simply because it's utterly impossible for these tiny little pathetic forces of military goon patrols to go around and round up a nation of fully armed citizens who have AR-15s and 50 caliber Desert Eagles and AK-47s. I mean, we've got more ammo than, you know, the armies of India and China combined here in America. So we're the most powerful military force in the world. The American Jefferson militia is the citizenry. So they can't round us up. I mean, if they could try to for a little while, like they and mess with people quite a bit, like they did after Hurricane Katrina. But as soon as word got out, it would be like a rat attacking a lion. So what they want to do is trick everybody into getting them to go into the camps. And so they'll definitely probably, in my predicting, they'll definitely succeed and they'll get a concentration camp network going. It'll be quite horrific and all that. But that's largely probably going to just be for the people that can't be woken up, the lambs for the slaughter, really. I mean, I think the Patriots, people listening here now, the Alex Jones community, the Ron Paul crowd, I mean, those people I don't think will end up in the camps because they know what's going on, and they're probably preparing, or when they know when everything goes down, where not to go, and where not to go is in the FEMA camp. That'll just be for the blind, unfortunately. So it's very sad, but it's pretty much, that's the story of history.
Kind of the sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sheep marching right into their fate, their death. So too bad.
Interesting. Well, I know you've had quite a bit of experience with self-sufficiency, and I just, you know, maybe you could tell us what does it mean to become self-sufficient, and why do we need to do that?
Okay. Yeah, this is, I've said for years now. I mean, I was on Dr. Deagle's show, the Nutrient Medical Report, in 2007, yelling at people saying this is the issue, and I still hold the same position now. There's nothing more important than self-sufficiency for two principal reasons. One, if you want to live, you're going to have to, I'm not kidding around here, you can call me extreme all you want, but we'll see who's right in a year or two. If you want to live, you're going to have to be able to take care of yourselves, because if the dollar collapses, if the dollar does not continue to be a reserve currency and loses its power, we're not going to have things in mass called, like grocery stores or cheap fuel and so forth. It's going to be quite horrific, and the people that will survive and will have any comfort will be those who know what weeds are healthy in their backyard, or know how to plant and harvest broccoli and tomatoes and garlic and antibiotic herbs and so forth. But the other, probably even more important reason that self-sufficiency is so important, I've been saying this for years on the radio, is because that is exactly what gives people power. It's exactly what the New World Order and our criminal government does not want people to have, because then it's the exact opposite of a welfare state. If you have everybody, you know, making their own clothes, and you have networks of neighborhoods and families who are growing food and holding their own religious and church services and having their own gunsmithing and farming and so forth. I mean, if the economy collapses, who really cares? You know, because it's the New World Order's problem if the economy collapses. I mean, if we all just stopped using banks tomorrow, you know, it may hurt us for a little while, you know, but we'll recover. We'll develop something different. We can use silver or something as a currency, or whatever we decide to use as a currency. But the New World Order will cease to exist if we stop using their money. So, I mean, self-sufficiency is not just farming and gunsmithing and so forth. It's basically putting the power back into the hands of the people completely, which is largely how our nation existed up until about 1920, until we became a welfare state. So it's the central issue. I think it's the most important issue of all, just power. I mean, we've become so used to everybody, you know, I get my food from someone else, I get my clothes from someone else, and everything I need to survive is given to me by someone else, and I don't know how to construct or make or produce any of the things I need to survive, so if the system breaks, I break. We need exactly the opposite. We need to have, we need to be in control of our own destiny, which means being in control of our own resources and the things we need, water, food, spirituality, community, and so forth.
You know, it seems like that what you're discussing there is really the antithesis of what the New World Order would want. The New World Order folks would, if they want to exert control, they need sheeple that are very dependent on them. So if you're self-sufficient and able to, you know, to create and have everything you need to survive, and you don't need to depend on their systems, then they kind of lose that exertion of control on you to that extent. So that seems like a very important thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the power of this nation is not, I mean, there's this huge illusion going on that the New World Order even has any power. I mean, they don't. I mean, like I just said, if we all just said, nope, we're not using your schools, we're not going to watch your propaganda on TV, we're not going to use your money and so forth. I mean, they're just a bunch of pathetic people running around screaming and crying like Nancy Pelosi just recently did in that news conference, you know, wondering why we're not doing what they want. I mean, we basically do what they want and become dependent on them, and it leads to a miserable life for us, this vaccine world. And all we need to do is just cease participating in them. There's no violence involved. There's no nothing. And it's we create an incredible world of the people and our interests. It just somehow people have this tendency to be lazy. It's easy to get us to be lazy, and once we are, it becomes an addiction, and we don't want to stand up for our rights, and it takes us a lot to get up off the couch after we get in that mode. The whole country is kind of in the process of starting to get up off the couch right now, and I think it's going to get really serious here soon, in a good way for the people, because we'll gain back the power that we've always had within us, because we control the money, because we're the consumers. We can spend our money how we want. If there's a corporation that does something to us that is harmful, we just cease giving our money to them, and they cease to exist. It's that simple, really. But I mean, we've gotten tricked into thinking there's at least roundabout things we need to do. You know, we need to write our congresspersons or something. They don't care. They're not listening. All they're doing is listening to their lobbyists and their think tanks. I mean, what we need to do is take the power right to the source of the individual.
You know, I think one of the things that I've seen, and I'm sure you probably echo this too, is that I'm amazed at how fast people are waking up. I'm hearing people say things that I thought I'd never hear them say, you know, almost sounding like things that I used to say to around them, around other people. And it just seems like people are ready to take action and keep their eyes open more than ever before. It's kind of encouraging.
I think it's absolutely exploding. And I think my personal opinion is this vaccine thing is what's going to do it, because I'm noticing here in my little town I live in, West Lafayette, Indiana, is full of unawake people. It's a wonderful, beautiful town, but nobody is politically aware. But there's a big unrest about this vaccine thing going on. And for some peculiar reason, I have some theories, the mass media has actually, the New World Order's mass media has fueled this unrest, because they've advertised in certain indirect ways that the vaccine has some questions. So it's almost like they're trying to get the people to be restless about it. So when they come and force the vaccine on us, which is coming very soon, of course, is already showing up with people getting fired from their jobs and whatnot for not taking it. So what's going to happen is you're going to have basically some kind of huge conflict between the New World Order's puppets, the paramilitary police and so forth, versus the people rejecting vaccines. And that's a divide and conquer scenario right there. So there's something strange going on, but it's they're in response to what you said, people are waking up so much. There's this huge interest in my writings, my books, and emails from people all the time. And I was considered crazy just a year ago, and now people are seeking me out for information. So it's very encouraging.
Yeah, that's interesting. People graduated very quickly from a total loon to a hero now. You know, it's like you're almost like a prophet. You know, all this stuff, mm-hmm. You saw it coming and you told them.
Yeah, right. Funny. People think you run into two camps of people. One type of person, I'll say, oh, yeah, I predicted that, because it's right in my book, Corporatism, Chapter 3, how, you know, I outlined exactly what happened last October with the financial collapse, how credit was restricted and then the economy goes into collapse mode because of the restricting credit. I mean, it's the simplest prediction ever because it's happened over and over and over. And then I'll tell people, yeah, I predicted that in my book. And you'll get either two kinds of people, either people that drop their jaw in awe and think that you're some sort of divine being, or they'll just be people that just deny and say, oh, no, that's not possible. Nobody can predict that thing. But really, it's both answers are wrong. All it is just simply using your brain and looking at the repeated patterns that the New World Order does over and over and over. So it's easy to predict what's going on. That's how we know that, you know, these FEMA camps are not going to sit there unoccupied. They're going to be occupied. We just have to figure out what we're going to do about it.
Yes. Well, we're going to, shift into a little different area right now, just a moment. Before we do, I just wanted to mention that if anyone has a question for Jeff, then if you've called in, then what you want to do is hit *2, and that'll indicate to me that you want to ask a question, and I can unmute your line. If you're tuned in online through republicmagazine.com/webinar, you can type a question in the question box and hit submit, and that'll let me know and see the question so that I can ask it of Jeff. What I think we might want to do is go ahead and move into an area of asking about self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
What is a self-sufficient house on a low budget?
Okay. I actually have built a house that you could consider sort of a perfect house for the kind of age that I think we're entering in for the next decade or so. And it's an underground, it's called an underground house or an earth home. I built this in a forest not too far from me. And but it's really not totally underground. If you look at it, it just looks like a hump of dirt, just like a small hill in the middle of this little opening and some trees in this little area of forest near my house. And it's on a little patch of land that I built or that I bought. And it's when I think about it, I can't really. I just went and did it over the last couple of years because I was concerned. I'm not sure if I'll ever really need it. But I just became concerned, you know, if I needed somewhere to possibly be to keep safe in, extremely cold winters and so forth. So I started researching that. And an underground home such as that I've built always pretty much stays about 50 to 60 degrees, whether it's summer or winter. And that's because the ground is always about 55 or 53 degrees. So it's kind of funny how we here in we Americans build these wood homes that are above ground and are impossible to keep a comfortable temperature. They're always too hot. They're always too cold. It costs us $200 a month to heat them sometimes in the winter. And the air is dry and not healthy and so forth. If everybody just had these wonderful earth homes and we could build whole neighborhoods of these, you would eliminate completely the need in general for heating and cooling. And this is no joke. I'm not kidding. I remember when I was constructing, I built it completely by myself, constructing this earth home. One time it was 0 degrees in December. This is December, or last year, December 2008. And I was It was about 10 degrees, and I went inside the house to work on it. I was doing some painting and varnishing and so forth. And I was just in my T-shirt and had no heat, nothing. And I had the door. The door is on the roof, and I went up to the door, and after being in there a few hours, this is about midnight by this time, and I peeked my head out, and it was just, I could not believe, I forgot how cold it was because I'd been inside working and walking around getting all hot and sweaty and so forth, and I couldn't believe how incredibly frigid it was outside, and I had no idea, I just forgot that it was. So the house stayed that warm with the door and the roof open. I mean, it just boggled my mind how incredibly efficient this is, just because it's part of the, it's contiguous with the earth, and therefore contiguous in temperature with the earth. And it's just amazing to me that we're not all doing this, and more so that none of us are aware of this. This is really a technology. I mean, we're so concerned with heating and cooling and thermostats and everything. We could eliminate it all. And earth homes like this don't have to be, they're not caves. If you saw the one that I built, it's quite wonderful, really. It's the inside is just incredibly comfortable. And it's like, it feels like a cozy cabin. And it's really not below ground. It doesn't feel like you're below ground and you're inside it, because it's really not. I piled the dirt up over it. And the biggest concern I had was water. And actually, when I read several books on how to build an earth home, they warned me, do not underestimate water, its ability to get into the house. And I did not, but I am having a water leak in one part of the roof, and it's been a real nightmare to try to figure out where that water leak's coming. Because if you get a water leak, it creates mold on the wood and so forth. So there's a lot I could tell about this house. Do you want me to where should I go with this?
Well, you know, certainly you can feel free to share a bit more about it. I think a lot of people find that quite interesting.
That has been one thing I found. I thought people would find this boring, and you know, but every single person I talk to about this finds it just extremely interesting, this whole story. This is, of course, how many of our American Indian friends live and have lived in the past. And so technologically, their houses were more sophisticated than ours. Of course, Henry David Thoreau, in his incredible book Walden, wrote about that, how the Indian homes were so sophisticated. Anything from teepees to, you know, huts or whatever they built. And then you go look at the hordes of poor European Americans back then in the early 1800s, and they would be living in these shanties and shacks, freezing cold during the winter and so forth. So our great technologically advanced culture is missing a couple of things that our wonderful American Indians could have taught us. But anyway, this home is basically, the way I did it is I just dug a hole. Well, I didn't. I started to try to dig the hole myself. But after working for about 10 hours, I realized that I'm getting nowhere. So I paid someone $500 to bring their earth mover, and they came in. It took them about 2 minutes. They dug a hole, a circular hole, about 3 feet deep. And one thing I really wanted this house to have was really tall ceilings. There are 12-foot tall ceilings in the center, and because I just knew that'd be so comfortable inside. But they dug a home, and what I did basically is I put stakes, huge posts, 4x4s, all around the sides of the home in a circle. So there was 8 of them, and then I connected those with 4x4x8s, huge pieces of thick, incredible wood, and so it basically looked like a stop sign from the top view. And so like a semicircle, of incredibly strong semicircle. And then what I did is I put the roof on it in a dome, like a cone, and then attached, I put a center post in the very middle, which I didn't really need, but I just wanted to for safety, to make sure I was over preparing for the strength of the house. And the thing, basically, every single part of the house pushes against every other part of the house. I mean, if I could draw a picture of it for everybody that's listening, it just is a, I mean, I read about this design, I didn't think about it myself, but I mean, it's like an engineering marvel, really, because it's, you could stack so much weight on this house. I mean, I think you could put tons and tons and tons of material of some sort in this house, and it would be unfazed, because it's just so incredibly strong, that just the way it's built. I think of our tornado, our homes are in America that are so at risk from tornadoes, sticking above the ground there, and you know, a tornado comes anywhere near them, and it's just they turn into a pile of wood. Kind of a funny thought, really. Not for the people that suffer, but just how pathetic our houses are. If a tornado came by my house, it would at the most it would just clear away the dirt roof, probably, and maybe if it was a really powerful tornado, maybe it would take off a couple of the boards on the roof. But I'd be pretty surprised if it could do that. So it's basically, it looks like a circular cone house, and then I just piled, it took me forever, but I just piled on foot after foot of dirt around the sides, and then I piled on 1 foot of dirt on the roof after trying to properly seal it from water leaks, and then I put seed on the top a couch grass seed on the top of the roof, because it grows so incredibly fast. It's so incredibly powerful of a material, and it's food, by the way, emergency food. And the root structure basically formed a mesh and kept all the dirt on the roof from sliding down. I had made sure the angle of the roof was such that it would be very unlikely if any dirt slid down on the angle of the roof, but that just the couch grass kept it that much more unlikely that it would. So, and then the roof is in the ceiling. I did that for a number of reasons. And then the inside is all, it's pretty nice. I've got it stained and varnished, and it's quite wonderful. I kind of want to go there right now. It's a little retreat. I don't know if I'll ever need it, but I just wanted to build it. I just mentioned Thoreau a couple minutes ago, Henry David Thoreau. That's what his whole book Walden is about, when he went to the forest and built a retreat. I basically had him as my hero when I was building this home, and I just wanted to do it just for, if I never need it for emergency, I knew I would need it. I could use it for a cabin or a getaway or something. So, I mean, the whole thing only cost me $2,000, including, if you include the land, $2,500, because the land I got, you can buy land for $500 in certain places. This was just a third of an acre. It was actually pretty good size. You can get a lot smaller piece of land to build something like this. It just has to be kind of isolated so you don't get county inspectors and nosy neighbors calling, tattletaling on you, calling the building code people and all this kind of stuff. Because now, of course, we have building codes. Back in, I guess, for some reason our government thinks that buildings just routinely used to fall down more than they do now. And so we need their help in how to build our houses and stuff. Of course, I'm being cynical. And so they basically, what the building codes are, to make sure nobody builds something like what I built, make sure that everybody's got a house that you have to pay an arm and a leg to heat and cool, and you can't be. An underground house like I built has many purposes. It's, if I want to be invisible, it's invisible. I mean, because I can just go hide in it. I don't think that'll ever happen though, but it's just kind of interesting. I mean, if it's protected from weather, protected from cold. I'm one of these 2012ers in a certain way. And I've got good reason to believe that the Mayans were correct about some things they said about the sun. The reason I have good reason to believe that is because some of the things they said about the sun, like the vanishing of the sunspots, have already started to happen. So if what they say is true, we're going to get some pretty big radiative sun events coming around in the next couple of years. And this would be a good spot to hide out if that's going on. I mean, there's just so many positives to it. I can't even really think of any negatives. So it's just quite wonderful, and anybody can do this. And if you don't have money to buy wood, new like I did, all you do is you just go find a rundown house somewhere, and you can just take all the cinder blocks and wood that you want off that house, just rip it down. Nobody's going to care. I did a bunch of this when I built mine. I got tons of cinder blocks from a rundown house. You can find a rundown barn or something, and you can get materials for free. So then all you'd have is the price of land. And if the wood doesn't look that good, well, all you do is you get super strong floor paint and paint all the inside with oil-based super solid floor paint, and it'll look like $1 million when you get done. So there you have it.
well, I'm wondering, it seems like as far as for self-sufficient life, I guess one of the things that a lot of us would wonder is, what are the most important items that you see as far as creating a self-sufficient life? And you know, we can think of things like, how important is it to have guns, you know, and other things. So maybe you can help us on that a little bit.
Okay, yeah, I think the most important thing to have is the proper firearms. But also, if you could just make a list, when I think of making a list here, I just have to sit here and think of what I have in my house because I've been for years I've been preparing for this. Of course, okay, let's talk about water for a second. I've read quite a bit on water storage, and I started to realize when I've read a lot about water storage that that's not really as intimidating as it sounds. I remember when I read a couple my first books on water storage, they just made it sound like such a big deal, so intimidating and so forth. And when I started doing it, it's really nothing. I mean, all I do, I've got one of those Ecolo Blue machines that Alex Jones always talks about. But to tell you the truth, I don't really, I don't want to step on Alex here too much, but I don't really use it that much. What I actually use is one of the, probably a lot of people listening to this show know about the Berkey, that it's just basically two big bottles stacked on top of each other. The top one has filters that the water seeps through and seeps into the bottom compartment. And there you've got an endless supply of water because the reason is those filters, if you just scrub them and make sure they don't get filled up with all that algae and stuff that can just settle into water, to my knowledge, they last for a decade or so. I mean, I've got all kinds of stored filters here, but I have never stopped using the first set of filters ever that came with my original Berkey that I bought back in 2005 or something it was. So we're going on 4 years, and it's down there in my garage right now, filtering water, like it better than it's ever done. I have to scrub it just maybe once a month. That's just because I'm lazy. Don't do it more. But I always make sure to filter rainwater. I never, ever filter water through the tap. And I think a lot of people don't get this point. I mean, it's not just fluoride. You need to realize that there's all kinds of stuff. The water in general, to make a long story short, the water coming out of your tap is, you can consider it, for lack of better words, diseased water. And if you drink it, you are going to have problems. You will notice if you change your water, if you've been drinking tap, even filtered, heavily filtered tap water, Berkey filtered tap water, if you change your drinking habits and drink rainwater that's properly filtered, you will notice, you'll notice more energy. This is what happened to me. You'll notice you feel different. You don't fight colds, and a lot of different health benefits will happen if you do that. So that's really an easy one. If you live in a desert, then you really have to have a lot of storage. You know, every time it rains, you need to be storing 150 gallons, which is pretty easy in a good rainstorm. Off your roof, 150 gallons may pour off your roof in 2 minutes in a good enough downpour. But in where I live in Indiana, it rains all the time, so I just usually store between 30 and 100 gallons. And it's simple, and it's free, and it's wonderful, really. So, and I just have these big tubs that I bought, 55-gallon drums you can use. You can get as sophisticated as you want, but it's really not that technical. And so, I mean, one of your huge basic needs, water, the best quality, highest quality water there is, can be just if you just bought a $200 Berkey, is done. I mean, you can buy an Ecolo Blue, too. I cannot say enough positive about the Ecolo Blue machine I have. And I want to say that for Alex's benefit because I love Alex and don't want to say anything negative about my Ecolo Blue because there is nothing negative to say about it, but it is, you know, out of some people's price range, so then you got to look to the Berkey. And you have to do another thing is rainwater is the least polluted water on the planet. You can go read any book about rainwater or water storage or anything, and they'll all tell you that the best water is rainwater. So if you can get water out of the mist in the air or rain, you're getting the best water there is. So you want me to, I can talk about a couple different issues as well. Want me to switch gears from water?
Sure. I mean, I can think of some other things like, you know, would it come to mind, what sort of medicine do we use in a self-sufficient life, and kind of how do the herbs and vitamins play into that whole thing? Because I think most of us would know that it'd be a lot better than Big Pharma's so-called treatments.
Yeah, there are no treatments Big Pharma has. I mean, there's symptom regulation that they have. You know, if you get diabetes, they give you medicine for the symptoms. But there are no cures or anything. Now, this is the big deal. Basically, you have to learn that the medicines that will cure you are the kinds that you can plant in your yard. For example, if you can plant echinacea in your yard, or if you can grow aloe plants, I've got aloe plants all over my house. That's the real medicine. I mean, if you get, let's take a staph infection. My wife actually got a staph infection extremely bad on her leg. And, of course, everybody starts freaking out. My parents are calling in, the neighbors, everybody thinks it's an emergency. And I said, well, why does everybody think it's an emergency? And the reason is because everybody at the hospital and the big pharma and medical organizations say there's no cure for it. And they don't. Nobody knows what to do. And I said, no, that's all. I just got my book out called Herbal Antibiotics, which is by Stephen Buhner. And I just read staph infection. There's all like 15 cures in that book. And I just chose one, aloe. So I just cut one of the branches of aloe off of an aloe leaf off one of my big aloe plants and just put it on my wife's leg where that staph infection was. And in about 3 days, it was completely gone. So now we told that I live here by Purdue University, and there's all kinds of, you know, the medical experts and all the big vaccine makers, and everybody's here. And we tell people that, and they just laugh, and they can't, they, oh, there's no way, because we've been told by the experts there is no cure for staph. And so the point here is, to answer your question, I could give you 10 more stories like that. But the answer to your question is medicines have to be what the real medicine is. The real medicine is not some chemical somebody develops in a lab. And the reason we know that those aren't medicines is because somebody name a cure for me from Big Pharma, there aren't any. It's questionable if the polio vaccine is really a cure for reasons I discuss in my book, Corporatism. But other than that, there's nothing. But there's cures for literally everything that you can be planted right in your yard. So you have to get a book like Herbal Antibiotics by Buhner. There's another really good book that I read called The Uses of Wild Plants. It's a big white book, white cover, black and white cover. And you'll find everything under the sun to cure anything. And these things really work. When I got into this a decade ago, I was skeptical. But, man, it is one of the most amazing cover-up jobs in our mass media is this garbage that the American medical systems do anything, and that alternative medicine is for crackpots. It is so stunning. Even people in this 9/11 truth movement, I don't even know much about how the incredible cover-up and scam that is. Alternative medicine is just unbelievably powerful. Nobody has a clue. I mean, if you want, I could tell a story that would – do you have a second for me to tell a story just to show how powerful alternative medicine is?
Oh, absolutely. That'd be great.
Okay. When I was still teaching at Purdue, I was teaching at a branch campus up in Purdue – at Purdue Calumet up in Hammond, Indiana. And I had a class that I taught called Ethics, and there was a student. We would often get into interesting political discussions in that class. I, of course, had to water them down so I didn't get fired. I ended up getting removed from the university anyways. But anyway, there was a student there that had arthritis. She was 20 or so. No, actually, she was 19. I asked her. She had arthritis in her wrist ever since she was 10. And I said, oh, that's just most likely from a vaccine or something like that. And then the class, of course, went into a huge uproar when I said that. That's impossible. No way. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, I had to be real careful with my words here because I didn't want the FDA to come in and throw me in jail or something. And in real careful terminology, what I said to her is I said, I will make you a bet that if you do, I didn't want to say I could cure it or something like that because then the FDA could come in and, because, you know, of course, the FDA wants to tell us that the only people that can say anything about medical cures is them, the exact people who have no cures. So what I did is I said, if you do a couple certain things, I'm going to give you a list of 9 things to do that extreme arthritis you have. She couldn't even move her wrist. I said, that extreme arthritis will be gone in 1 week. And, of course, the whole class laughed. Aha. Everybody thought it was so funny and stuff. So we made a $50 bet right there in front of the whole class, and I gave her the points that she needed to do. So the points were something like this. One, she had to become completely vegan, no animal foods at all, not even like, you know, eggs in your bread or something like that. Two, she had to avoid all soy products. Three, everything she ate had to be completely organic. Four, she had to avoid all oils except for, I gave her like 4, like safflower oil, hemp oil, olive oil, and so forth. Then there was a string of like, you know, 3 other points that I gave her or something like that. And I can't remember exactly what they were. And to everybody's utter shock in the class, and anybody who's listening that was in that class right now knows that I'm telling the truth, and this could be verified with any of those students that were in that class. I actually lost the bet. Because it didn't, I said the bet was that I could cure that. Sorry, it would be gone in 1 week. I lost the bet because it went away in 2 weeks. So it was quite amazing. This incurable arthritis she had for over a decade in her life that no doctor could even touch was vanished just by me giving her some eating and nutrition tips in a college classroom on ethics. So that's the power of alternative medicine and studying nutrition, and that's how misled we Americans are in all of our, you know, cheeseburger culture.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way that you know that it's all about money as far as big pharma and the whole pharmaceutical medical cartel and the collusion and the way the whole thing is locked in with the media and the big advertising bucks that that's involved there and keeping the status quo and all that. So. Yeah, they don't want this information to get out that you're talking about.
No. And it's far from – it's not like vaccines where the people are waking up. It's not like 9/11 truth where people are really waking up. It's still kind of – nobody has a clue. Nobody knows what bentonite clay is or nobody knows what echinacea is. And very few people know that you're supposed to eat aloe rather than just have it as some decorative plant. People are completely lost in these issues. I mean, they think when they get the rotavirus, their kid gets the rotavirus at 1 year old, the only thing to do is go get them an IV in the hospital so they don't shrivel up and die, when all you need to do is just give them a certain probiotic and it's cured in 30 minutes. So so it's pretty amazing the snow job that we've all had on that one.
Yeah, it definitely is. I want to remind everybody again that we're listening. We have Jeffrey Grupp today. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yeah, Grupp.
Grupp. Okay. And if you do have a question for Jeffrey, if you'd like to dialogue with him directly, and you're on the phone line, then just go ahead and hit *2 on your phone keypad, and that way we'll know that you want to ask a question, and we can unmute you to dialogue with him. If you're online at republicmagazine.com/webinar, just type your question in the question box and hit submit, and we'll see the question and be able to ask it of him. I want to, you know, kind of move into another really, really important area and talk about that a little bit is, you know, of course, food. We got to be able to eat. How much do we need, and how do we store or grow food in winter and cold areas and all those types of things?
Yeah, this has been a big one on my mind personally lately. The reason I know any of the things that I know that I'm talking about on the show is because I've been looking into it for my own safety. I haven't been too worried about getting rounded up by the FEMA police, although that could happen, but I've been more worried about what to do when the lights go out. So I've noticed a lot of people talk about survivalism and so forth, but when you go look into their information, I mean, they don't really say that much, so I've really kind of just gone to lots of disparate sources to try to find the info. And food is, that's a biggie. And the reason is why it's such a biggie is because it's expensive. I mean, you can go to eFoods Direct, that company that is associated with Infowars.com. And, you know, a year's food for one person is $1,600. And so, I mean, come on, how many people listening can afford to buy, you know, that for a family of four? Not too many. So this is the hot issue. And I really see only two solutions. Really, maybe only one. The two are you got to grow it or you got to forage for it. I don't talk too much about hunting because I'm a vegan, but needless to say, if you live in a place where there's big deer, that's a pretty good food source right there. If you have if you got yourself a 40 caliber or something, you'll one good shot and that deer is going to go down. You have to really be careful because when you eat animal meats, that's how you get worms and parasites and wasting disease and all this kind of stuff. All that is basically avoided completely if you do a vegan diet, and the vegan diet is going to be equally plentiful. You may have to walk around a bit looking for leaves and so forth to eat. It may not be as exciting as a big deer steak or something. But, I mean, so what I'm trying to get at here is that I don't know if buying tons and tons – I mean, I don't want to say anything against eFoods Direct. I've actually – been a pretty good customer of those of theirs, if you want the truth. Bought a lot of stuff from them that's sitting in storage. But probably it's not real feasible for everybody. And we don't know. I mean, we may need food for years. So I think the best, the surest thing, that the no-risk solution to the food issue is you just have to really learn what foods grow wild near you. That's the least risk. I mean, what if some people listening might say, oh, I could farm. Well, you know, when I started farming years and years ago, I started the first big attempt to farm about 7 years ago in my backyard. And I was shocked. It was not quite so straightforward. I mean, the carrots went well and the tomatoes were a disaster. You know, I mean, so it's pretty hit or miss. I mean, so if you're not experiencing that, it's you don't want to, you know, put your family is dependent on that personal farm until you really know what you're doing. So again, the best thing is wild foods, and the thing is wild foods are absolutely everywhere. For example, in my city of West Lafayette here, and it's late May into June, the whole city turns yellow because dandelions are absolutely everywhere. I mean, there's this one field I'm thinking of by the city library I take my daughters to all the time. And it's just, as far as you can see to this edge of this forest, is just all yellow everywhere. And I mean, I could pick, not literally tons, but figuratively speaking, tons and tons of dandelions that could be, if I dried them. What you do then is you need to dry them out. You got to get them out of the sun, and you just let them dry, and then you got to seal them up in plastic bags. And that's food. You could technically, if they're properly dried out, store that for years and years. And so, of course, you probably wouldn't need to do that if you needed the food right away. But dandelions are extremely healthy. Every single part of the plant can be eaten. In fact, it's got many medicinal qualities. Like if you have warts, for example, the juice of the stem you put on the wart, and I've never experimented with this, but I've heard that it can cure warts and other skin ailments. But what you need to do is find good food solutions like that, because I think a lot of people are going to be unprepared and not ready for the real farming that can really sustain a family for, you know, years on end. So the best thing is to understand is that the weeds that everybody likes to spray Roundup on and kill and pull up and throw away and everything, a lot of those are way more nutritious and plentiful food sources than anything in the genetically modified food stores of the grocery store. So I think that's the big one. I mean, I think a lot of people know this, what I'm saying, but I'm just trying to explain in different words why it's so critical. Now, a lot of you might wonder how you do this. What you do is you just go onto Amazon and, you know, look up wild food or foraging or something like that, and just find out the foods in your area that are plentiful and what they look like. You really got to be careful with identification. You know, for example, wild carrot looks a lot like hemlock, for example. Of course, one is poison and one is ambrosia. So ambrosia being, you know, a figurative way of saying a wonderful food. So I would just get books on it, and when the time comes, when the dark matter hits the fan, then I would consult the book and be ready to go if you don't want to study up on it beforehand. So again, the best thing to do is not think that grocery store is going to do it for you, and not think that a farm is going to do it for you unless you have good experience. Also, a farm, another thing, it can be ravaged by, if things get as bad as I think, you're going to have looting bands of crazed people, and a lot of them could be quite well armed. And if they see nice stalks of corn growing over your backyard fence, you think your little flimsy wood fence is going to keep them out? I don't think so. So another thing is you can have food that's invisible. For example, I've got cherry trees growing all along my backyard, and most people think the cherries are unedible and are poisonous. Of course, I know otherwise. They're poisonous. The leaves are. They've got cyanide, which actually can be used for interesting weaponry and so forth. So everything's got a use, and you can a lot of things you can grow. Like you can grow wild garlic rather than the typical farming garlic right in your backyard, and everybody will think it's just weeds and junk, but you'll know, this is food, and it's nutrients, and it's medicine, just like the dandelions. So there's another thing. You can also grow like a hidden in plain view bountiful farm where most people won't know. If you're in a city, for example, and you're worried about theft, what you do is just grow a weed farm. And so everybody will walk by and say, oh, what a disgrace that rundown place is. And you'll know, this is the best source of food anywhere around. So you just have to think about real-world situations if things get this ugly. And we're clearly on the way to them getting that bad with all these homeless camps showing up all over the place and so forth. So solutions are easy. You just have to know what to do. I mean, there's really nothing for anybody to be afraid of. I mean, for reasons I already stated, the Roundups aren't going to happen, so don't worry about that. Get rid of your fear on that. And it's food shortage. Unless you live in an extreme desert out in Albuquerque or something, your food should be all around you. There's nothing to worry about. You just have to get the right info.
So it's really knowing what to look for and how to look for it. Yeah, that makes sense.
In my backyard, I've got nettles growing. I mean, they just grow and grow and grow, and I think they're about the most nutritious plant ever that I've discovered. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I wanted to maybe even switch gears again another time, but before we do, I think it'd be good if you gave out all of your contact information so the folks listening can have that available.
Okay, my website is antimatterradio.com. I run a really small little radio show. It's on a lot of the topics I'm discussing today, and it's a lot to do with spirituality and the New World Order. It's a very small show, and I kind of like it that way. But from there, you can get to all my books. I've published 3 books, Corporatism, The Secret Government of the New World Order. That's the book that's selling so well right now on Amazon. And I've got another one called Telementation, which is a book on meditation. That's my favorite book that I've written, but it's the one that seems to generate least interest. And then I've got another one that's out any day called The Telescreen, which is kind of was a part of the Corporatism book that split off. And then another one that I'm just about done with that my publisher's bugging me for to get to them is called The Invisible Government. And it's about this American Revolution. I'm really concerned about this American Revolution that we're going into being co-opted and hijacked by the New World Order. A lot of my writings on Gary Franchi's site and on Infowars.com are specifically addressing that issue. I'm really concerned that we're just being driven into divide-and-conquer scenarios, like the anti-vaccine people versus the police, for example, rather than it needs to be the people against the New World Order, the controllers of the New World Order. That's the battle. The people versus the police is divide and conquer. That's enough. That's a joke. That's misguided. That's people who don't know what they're doing. The G20, for example, I remember Luke Radowski of InfoWars out there. He was bullhorning right into the police. He was saying, you know, you're not the enemy. You're part of us. And that's exactly the point. I mean, we can't get wound up and see the police on TV using their batons and all these sound weapons and so forth. I mean, you have to understand, these people are nothing compared to the tens and tens of millions of super armed Americans. If they push and push, this will sadly turn into an armed conflict, and they will be squashed like a little bug under your foot, which would be very sad. Nobody wants that. But we have to realize, the reason I say this is to get rid of our fear. That what we need to be doing is focusing on how to prepare ourselves, how to get spiritually centered, how to get our food stores right in our mind, how to get water preparations all taken care of, and so forth. That's what we need to be doing. Because when things go down, we don't want to be helpless and weak. We want to be strong because we've got good food, good water, good weapons, and we're spiritually centered. So anyway, I didn't even get my contact. So yeah, I've got those books, and yeah, antimatterradio.com is my site, and that's the best. Anybody can email me, and I'll try to get back to you. I always try to get back to everybody's email.
Great. Okay. I just want to remind everybody again that if you'd like to ask a question, hit *2 on your phone keypad if you're on the phone, and we'll see that you have a question and be able to call on you to do that. And then if you're online, then just type your question into the question box and hit submit. And to remind everybody, the replay of this webinar and others will be at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And what I wanted to do is to, you know, and you kind of touched into it a little bit, Jeff, but how does spirituality play into all of this? And maybe to tell us, what is spirituality and how powerful is it in this upcoming dark age?
That's the number one issue. Now, whenever I bring up spirituality, whenever you bring up issues like this, somebody's going to get offended, and I apologize in advance. I'll just give you my take on it, and I'm just trying to, for my own sake and own safety, I've tried to figure spirituality out to get the most accurate picture on it. So that's what I'll give you and all the listeners. Now, I take, the world religions to be all basically 3 things. One, very much in line with each other and possibly indistinguishable in many ways. 2, they're the ultimate instruments of power for the human race. They contain clues and tools that we all have forgotten. And 3, I take all the religions completely literally. So, I mean, for example, there really was somebody named Saul, traveling on the road to Damascus, and he really did see the light of God and fall down in a trance, way back when. So I don't hold any of this as myth or anything. The reason I hold it's all literal is because if we go look at the world archaeological sites, we find out that there were extremely powerful people or beings or something way back then that had advanced knowledge that we don't even have. So anyway, on to spirituality. So for that reason, I take spirituality more serious than anything. That's the reason I wrote that book, Telementation, which is sort of an instruction book. In in the Bible, Jesus says, with your faith, you can move that mountain. Okay, and then in John 10:34, he says to an angry mob of people, he says, ye are gods. And then in 1 Corinthians 3:9, he says that humans are the house of God. I mean, there's all these verses that show up, but all I would hear when I went to church when I was a kid is that you're sinful and horrible and going to hell if you don't do this and that. And then I would actually open up the Bible and look at Genesis 1:1, and it said, no, actually, I'm in the image of Elohim, of the Creator. So it really made me think that possibly a lot of these religions are co-opted or misguided or something's wrong with them, because if you just read the texts, you find out that from one perspective, just go with Christianity here, because I'm actually a Buddhist, but let's just go with Christianity.